Today, government housing targets an impossible dream as building approvals shrink. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, the ABS released data on the total number of dwellings approved in February recently, and I want to look at those figures today and also consider some of the broader implications, both politically and economically. They said that despite growth in private houses in the month, the total number of dwellings approved fell 1.9% in February, that's seasonally adjusted, after a 2.5% fall in January. The trend estimate for total approvals fell 3%, following a 2.7% January decrease. Specifically, approvals for private sector dwellings, excluding houses, fell 24.9% in February in seasonally adjusted terms. That was driven by a fall in the number of approved large apartment projects. In contrast, approvals for private houses rose 10.7% in February. The ABS said that the approvals of private sector houses rose in all states, with Western Australia up 20.7%, New South Wales up 17%, Victoria up 12.4%, Queensland up 3.4%, and South Australia up 2%. Total dwellings approved, though, fell 28.5% in Queensland. Meantime, rises were recorded in Tasmania, up 39.3%, New South Wales up 23.4%, South Australia up 15.4%, Victoria up 2.1%, and Western Australia up 0.9%. Of course, these are lumpy because approvals for high-rise includes multiple dwellings, and therefore one large approval for a development can have a significant impact. Now, this continues to confirm that the massive gap between the government's aspiration of 1.2 million new homes over the next 5 years is real and growing. In fact, on a straight line basis, this translates to a target of 240,000 next year, which, by the way, is still way under the number needed to house the surging migrants and also to fill existing shortfalls. In fact, dwelling commencements over the last calendar year undershot the national cabinet total by almost one third, falling to 163,836. This was the weakest since the 2012 total of 153,580. Now that means that Australia will fall 90,000 homes short of this year's national target of 240,000 new dwellings after new housing starts for 2023 came in at the lowest for 11 years. Dwelling commencements for detached houses sank below 100,000 for the first time in the decade, falling to 99,708, while those for so-called attached homes, apartments, townhouses and semi-detached level pegged the previous year's total of around 63,000. In 2023, the number of new apartment dwellings built across the capital cities of 51,484 represented a 4% increase on the year before, but an 11% decline on the decade average, and is 40% lower than the peak in supply when 80,093 dwellings were completed in 2017. That's according to the Urban Development Institute of Australia. And separate figures from the ABS show that 172,725 new housing completions were made in the year to December. That's little change from the 2022 total of 172,994, and that reflected work on existing projects that have been delayed or slowed due to weather delays and materials constraints, etc. In fact, CoreLogic said that the construction pipeline remains bloated, with ABS building activity data showing that around 255,000 dwellings approved but not yet completed, which should help to keep builders busy through 2024. Now, the slow momentum in construction is driven by scarce labour, not least because more construction firms are failing, as I discussed recently, and that also lifts the costs of employing people, plus, of course, demand for construction workers in the public sector and also in industrial contexts. And there's also the continued rise in prices of materials used in the industry, from bricks and concrete to fixtures and fittings. In fact, I spoke to one builder who said that cables for electrical systems had all but doubled in cost recently. The Master Builders Australia said that the cost of building a house compared with 2019 had risen by 39.8%, while building material costs were up by one third and hourly construction wages were up 12.7%. The workforce shortage is actually the biggest challenge, they said, and called on the federal government to increase apprenticeship incentives for both businesses and employees. And it coincides with new data from Jobs Council Build Skills Australia that showed 90,000 new skilled tradespeople were needed in the construction industry. Many in the construction industry are now seeking to fast-track new migrants to help fill the shortage created, of course, by those migrants themselves. Now, new ways of working, including prefabrication, might help, but that would require substantial change to the way the industry works and operates, so that's going to be a slow change. But interestingly, independent economist Cameron Murray, who was on my live show recently, argued that projects are feasible out there, but developers are unwilling to lower their profit margins. Property developers don't want to build more houses, not because it won't be profitable, but because it won't make more money than they have in the past, he says. And meantime, data from the New South Wales government showed that councils are on average taking 111 days to make a decision on development applications. That's compared to 107 days back in 2022-2023 and 83 days in 2021-2022. Now, this is driven in part because of community opposition and drawn-out engagement with locals, but it's also due to the complexity of some large-scale projects. And in fact, in Victoria, the statewide average timeframe for a development application to be resolved is even longer, at 168.7 days. And in the last 5 years, the average time between submitting the application and receiving an outcome from council has blown out by an extra 24.6 days, according to government data. And behind all of that, perhaps the first major hurdle to building enough homes across the country is that councils need to set their own approval targets, but are under no obligation to meet them. For example, over the past 5 years, fewer than half of Sydney local government areas actually met their housing targets. This mostly comes down to strong community opposition, with local councils caving in to the old NIMBY, not in my backyard, agitators. As a result, local councils often knock back planning permits and add development costs because of local politics. And here's a fun fact. According to the St George and Sutherland Shire Leader back in 2017, the then Kogarah MP Chris Mims declared, for God's sake, there must be some green space in Hurstville during the debate surrounding the eventually approved construction project, Stage 3 of the East Quarter development, that had an estimated construction cost of $193 million. And the then plans included basement parking, retail shops, two podiums and four residential buildings on top of the podiums, two seven-storey towers, one 17-storey tower and one 18-storey tower with 556 total units. The decision, by the way, by the Sydney South Planning Panel to approve the DA was unanimous. But Mims said that this was a grotesque example, but if we thought Hurstville was full, we ain't seen nothing yet. I've counted another 9 major development applications pouring forth thousands of people into the suburb over the coming 12 months. Mr. Mims said that he thought Hurstville was competing for the award of worst public planning in the Western world. Planning authorities and those who were entrusted with development applications were badly letting down the St. George community, he said. They are creating, in many instances, a high-rise hell and badly undermining community support for appropriate development, confidence in government administration, and even support for immigration in general. I've seen how development done well works around the world, where we can have high-density areas surrounded by parks, public transport, and schools big enough to educate our kids. Now, of course, State Premier Mims is on the hook to deliver more homes under the federal government plans, but he has warned that it will be all but impossible to meet the targets, despite now backing the build-up trend. So why not tackle the root cause issue here, which is, of course, too high migration? Well, entrepreneur Dick Smith fears today's young people will have no savings and will be forced to live in Chinese-style high-rise apartments unless immigration is urgently slashed That's according to an article in the Daily Mail. The veteran businessman and philanthropist said they need to understand the connection between the surging population and climate change, and the entrepreneur who turned 80 last month fears homes with a backyard in Australia's capital cities will no longer exist by 2050. He said that the national population will have almost doubled to 50 million by then, and housing will have become even more catastrophically unaffordable. For young people now, that would mean a future living in overcrowded conditions like China, even if Australia's annual population growth slowed to 1.6%, down from 2.5% now, which is the highest level since the early 1950s. Basically, we're doomed. We're going to increase our populations to staggering numbers, he told Daily Mail Australia. The beautiful houses with a block of land for the kids to play in the front yard and have a cubby house will be gone forever. Every house will be knocked down and replaced with high-rises. Jammed into high-rise like China, many very poor and who live just pay packet to pay packet and have no savings at all. A record net 548,800 migrants moved to Australia in the year to September. And Mr. Smith says he wants that slashed to 75,000 a year where it was until the late 1990s. But politically, I don't think that'll happen. And this article in the Sunday papers included some commentary from myself, highlighted the fact that Labour has no choice but to keep pumping migration and to keep pumping the housing sector. So the bottom line is this, whatever the numbers may say, it's a political decision at the moment to pump the migration hard and long and to mess around with housing so that your announceables sound okay, even if you miss your targets dramatically later, of course, after the next election. This is a major, major disaster. And unfortunately, it's politically driven. The incentives to do the right thing are just not there because, of course, big business want it rather different. As Dick Smith said, it's not going to happen. I can tell you we won't be reducing immigration. We'll be going to catastrophic population levels, which will destroy Australia as we know it today, he said. Big businesses, big business interests also donate to Australia's major political parties, ensuring there's high immigration outside of a pandemic. Whoever is in power. That's because the short circuits in the brains of the billionaires just want to make more money, he said. And they drive the immigration, and they drive the politicians, and they drive the whole system. Greed is unlimited. Actually, most Australians oppose high immigration, with the Australian Population Research Institute this week releasing a survey showing 71% disagree with the question, do you think Australia needs more people? But notably, those critical of high immigration are mainly comprised of older voters and non-graduates. That's based on the survey of 3,000 people in December. And of course, while Australia's economy has avoided falling into a recession so far, there has been a per capita recession since the June quarter of last year, with gross domestic product per Australian falling significantly. And there you have the underlying reason. Pump migration, and you can keep the GDP in positive terms. Never mind the consequences, never mind the overcrowding, never mind the housing supply problems and the housing unaffordability issues. So all of this has been created by a series of political decisions over recent years, which could have been different, but I don't think they're going to change now. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high. Price discovery and price transparency are hard to find. And then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.